Fat Joe starts us off on trumpet, and he throws it over to Frank West on tenor sax. This is titled Steamin', and it is from Thad Jones's 1957. Did you hear that? 1957 album titled After Hours. Kenny Burrell is on guitar. Paul Chambers is on bass. Arthur Taylor is on drums. As I just mentioned, Frank West is on tenor sax and on flute. And Mal Waldron is on piano. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we'll pick up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. So much has happened, and we have to get to it. We just have to. I want to start off with an update. That is, you will start off with the update, because you will be providing us the update about a very interesting question that prospective jurors were asked. As you know, the trial is in the jury selection stage, the trial concerning ex-cop Derek Chauvin, the first of four Minnesota police officers charged in the death of George Floyd during a violent arrest on May the 25th last year. So in the course of jury selection, when people come before the court and they are asked, they are quizzed about their attitudes and their beliefs sometimes, but to get a better judgment on the part of both the prosecution and the defense as to whether they would make suitable candidates for the jury listening to this case, hearing this case, that's a proper word, hearing this case. In questioning prospective jurors yesterday, this was an interesting question that was posed to them. Do you support Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement? Or do you support the Blue Lives Matter movement? The Blue Lives Matter is a police advocacy organization. And that was a question they were asked. Now, in and of itself, it's not so bizarre a question, but I want you to take us through your thinking about why was this question asked? What is the significance of the question? Not only for purposes of selecting a jury, but for purposes of proceeding with the trial as a whole. If such a juror is selected who answers the question to the satisfaction of the prosecution and the defense, now we will backtrack and say, well, what to begin with was the significance of this question? Why did you feel the need to ask it? And that's where we start today. Any ideas about the significance of the question and why it might have been asked? What is the reasoning behind it? What is the significance of the question itself? All right, 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And I'm expecting your usual cutting edge analysis today. What have you to say? What could be the reason for the question being asked about Black Lives Matter as opposed to Blue Lives Matter? 888-874-4888. Ed from Queens. Hello, Ed. How are you doing?
Hey, hello, Eutrice. How are you?
Okay. So tell us chapter and verse on why or what why you find the question interesting.
Well, before I get into that Vardir question, I just wanted to, because I wanted to get on yesterday, I wanted to give you kudos for your observation as far as with the decision of the city council. But I also wanted to put something to you, because I've been paying attention to this case since May the 29th, when the actual action took place with Derek Chauvin, in my opinion, killed Mr. White. On June the 6th, if you check Reuters, Derek Chauvin and his attorney were out on June the 5th. They were out to accept a plea. They were going to make a plea arrangement with the district attorney's office of Hampton County and the federal court to plead guilty with all of the outrage that was coming from the protests after the video was shown. And on the 6th, the deal fell apart. And no one knew why. There was no reason given. He was going to plead guilty. He was going to plead guilty to both charges. The charges was for civil rights to the federal government, and the charges that were being placed by the state. But the deal fell apart, and there was no reason given. And I put it to you, with the actions of the city council, I honestly, because there's no way you can tell me that no legal counsel told the city council not, even if they were proposing to make this deal about the announcement of the deal or even the attempt to offer the deal at this point in time. This raises an appealable option, even if the trial goes through. Derek Chauvin's defense attorney could say, "Hey, listen, I'm making an appeal because the jury pool was corrupted by this offer. By them making this offer, it shows that they are acquiescing to the fact that something was done wrong." And that will play heavily on a trial of criminal charges. The deal should not have been made. I can't believe that they were that blind. Now, back to your first question, as far as the voir dire question with all this hot mess, is to see where the juror stands. Is to see, well, if you're with Black Lives Matter, can you put that to the side and make an objective case as far as the prosecutor should be concerned with, as far as the defense is concerned with? If your blue lives matter, then you'll give the cop the benefit of the doubt. But this whole thing stinks. It's like a fish. It stinks from the head down. From June 6th and that whole plea deal falling apart to what the city council did with this astronomical a civil offer they made and the timing of it, the voir dire, the whole thing is rotten. And like I said, time and time again, we need independent forces. We need an independent office to handle these police matters when questions of police conduct and murder are arise. Because this always happens. These unnatural relationships with the prosecutor and the DA and the police always plays in.
Yeah, but you haven't answered the question. I appreciate your passion, but you sidestep the question. What is the significance of this question?
Well, I thought I answered. Like I said, it's to ask during the voir dire, you ask questions of the jury to ascertain whether they will be able to put their personal feelings aside or their personal prejudice aside and render a decision in the clarity of the evidence presented. Whether you're for Black Lives Matter, whether you're for Blue Lives Matter, that taints your whole decision-making process as an individual, because your vision is colored by who you support. Now, you might be able to talk your way out of it if you want to be involved, but that has to be taken into consideration. Personally, I'm for Black Lives Matter. I've been to protests. Any decision that I would make specifically pertaining to this case would be tainted by that. I'll be
Okay.
honest with you.
All right. You get credit. You get credit. Although I think you were a couple of yards short of the finishing line. But as usual, a very potent analysis. 888-874-4888. Who's going to answer this question? And you'll be shocked at the analysis I will offer when, you know, the time comes, sometime before the end of the program, we'll talk about it. But it was a very significant question. And there you have, well, I'm not going to answer it. I'll give one more person a chance to answer the question. What was the significance of that question? Do you have an answer for it? Step up, step up. That's right. Let's get you on the record. There's no need to be shy. We're not shy people, are we? No, we're not. We say what's on our minds. That's why I like this crowd. This group is a serious group. Joe from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. Thanks for having me on.
Hello. Thanks for calling.
This is something I've pondered for a long time as far as subscribing to any sort of general collective idea that has some kind of political ideology behind it. And it kind of started off with George W. Bush and support the troops. I always thought it was kind of a silly slogan, support the troops, like, because it's lumping all troops into one idea. And there are poor behaviors, and then there are good behaviors. And to support the troops kind of negates the negative. So I see the same with Black Lives Matter, and I see the same thing happen with Blue Lives Matter, or whatever that organization is called. I see it just lumps people into these collectives. It's a way of testing people's allegiance and alliances to your group and your ideology. So it doesn't leave room for individual thought and individual conception. So you can't argue. You're ruled by consensus. So I've always seen that as a problem, and I think that answers the other part of the question as far as it becomes a problem for any sort of criticism, and that serves the political agenda. At the end of the day, it controls the narrative. So that's all what right. I think is going on.
Very good. Make some strong points, and I appreciate that you make them. Thank you. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice. I see it as a very, very interesting question. And for me, no matter how a person answers that in terms of supporting one or the other, that puts that person in a position of not being able to give a fair decision about what happens in the trial and the evidence that come forth. So to me, those people that ask that question are looking to see where the person stands on one side or the other. If you stand on one side or the other, that would be probably an indication that you should not be on the jury. So that's the way I look at that. And I think that's the most significant thing about being asked that type of question. And it's very clear, if you pick one or the other, that's a difficult situation. If a person is not interested in being on one blue side or Black Lives side and whatnot, then you would probably be eligible to be on the jury. But I can't see them picking someone on the jury that'd be on one of those two sides that you mentioned.
All right. You picked that up. Very good. And why am I not surprised? I'm not surprised that you have that clarity about it. Thank you. Pat from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How you doing, Ms. Lee?
Okay, it's Yatrice.
Okay, how you doing? I called yesterday, but I wasn't able to get on. Okay, I'm just going to respond to the question that you put. Okay, I think the whole question, both questions, whether you support Black Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter, I think the whole question is what we call, is tainted. I'm surprised that the judge would allow them to even ask that question, for one.
You have to just repeat that for a bit because you sounded a little muffled and I lost you.
No, I said that I'm surprised that the judge would have even allowed him to get away with asking that question to the jury.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The reason why I say that is because I served on the jury. And one of the things is that I was a former member of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement. Actually, at the time, I was a law enforcement officer. And when I told the judge and the jury that, the judge said, I don't care who you work for, and I don't care what organization you belong to, as long as you can serve on my jury. So that's the reason why the question, I don't even know how the judge would even allow them to get away with that question or those questions, for one.
Okay, is there is there two coming up?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to put that out there first. I wanted to lead with
that.
All
right.
So the other thing is that maybe they're looking to, change it to another district. That could be another thing that they're trying to do, move it from that area, saying they can't get enough juries because they're all, you know, I'm not really sure what they're looking at. You know, why they would be asking the juries that.
All right. Well, thank you. Very, very strong observation. And you happen to be on point. Thank you. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Lead. Excellent program as always.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving me a few seconds here. You know, just as a logical statement, both statements are just overgeneralizations. They're not really meant to elucidate anything specific. You know, the operant condition of any statement is compared to what? I mean, you know, if you take the entire range of history of human life on Earth, everybody's life ends. You can say no lives matter and be correct in a certain context, or you can say they all matter given a certain context. So why would the judge ask the question? I think just to measure whether or not the potential juror is capable of any kind of critical thinking skills, whether or not they're, you know, they devoutly believe some overgeneralization, or whether they're willing to make distinctions about what these things mean. That would be my guess. You know, it's the kind of question you get asked on the entrance exam at a job interview or something.
and you still probably wouldn't get the job. Well,
yeah.
You gave it a very strong effort. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll take one more call before I extemporize. Randy from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you doing?
Hi. Okay, hey, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. I've been trying to get on the phone for the past couple of days. Everybody's been trying to get on because this is a very passionate and very poignant topic. I'm going to make my comments pretty brief. Going back to your very first statement when you asked a question a couple of days ago was about whether or not the defendant was going to get a fair trial. And what I do think that has happened, your astute observation as far as the city council making the announcement about the award for the death of George Floyd and the impact that that had in terms of the jurors who basically had to say that they could no longer be impartial, and the fact that there was a gift wrap to the defense to give credence to their application to move the venue. And I think this question goes along the same lines of being able to actually seat a jury that can be a part of administering a fair trial. See, that's the key to this whole question. The more things that are being, it seems to me, the more components that are adding to the inability to seat a jury that can be able to look past the media hubbub and their decision to support one group or another, that is really narrowing down the field of potential jurors. And if they can't seat a jury, then it cannot be a fair trial. And if there's no fair trial, they cannot proceed in terms of getting justice in this case.
So okay.
I don't think that based on all of the things that are happening right now, that they will be able to find an impartial jury that can adjudicate this matter. And in that case, this is going to become a serious quagmire, because the more time it takes to do that, the more polarized the public is. And usually what happens in these matters is that people are convicted in the court of public opinion, and, you know, then we actually don't get a chance to really ascertain the facts in the case to see if, in fact, this was murder, was this, intentional, whether it be manslaughter, murder one, murder two, whatever the case may be, the charges that are being brought against Officer Chauvin and the other officers. And the more this plays itself out, that's going to impact on the other three officers as well. So I don't know that they're going to be able to do this in any reasonable fashion in any short time frame. This is really going to turn into a bigger mess than what we've already seen.
Well, I'm surprised at your use of particular words like fair, and whether they will have, you know, essentially a free and fair trial.
And
how could you use such language?
Ah, that's exactly that. You just hit it. That is the whole point of trial and jury selection and due process in the law, that everyone is entitled, that they're perceived to be innocent until proven guilty in a fair trial with due process.
Well, that's what we are told, and that's what we believe. But that is not, in fact, the case at all. It's
exactly.
All make-believe.
Yes, it is. And
a trial like this, nobody wants a fair jury. A fair jury is the jury that gives them the decision that they want. And in order for them to get the decision that they want, they create it. And right in front of our eyes, this is what is so interesting about it. In front of our eyes, they are creating a racial rift in the jury pool.
Exactly.
From which they will, you know, select jurors.
Exactly.
So that if you believe, or if you're leaning toward Blue Lives Matter, it means you're pro-cop. And
yes.
Who's on trial? Cop.
Cop. Right.
All right. And if you believe in Black Lives Matter, where does that situate the prospective juror in the eyes of the lawyers and in the court?
with George Floyd, the victim. And that's my whole point. Now, see, that's my whole point. If I am the defense attorney, that's going to be the basis. Not only am I saying, hey, listen, we need to move the venue because they've already tainted. That was a word that was given by one of the callers. It's been tainted. It's been prejudiced by this large jury award to the family of George Floyd. And now you have that, as well as this question to figure out who. I mean, listen, I don't think there's anybody in the nation that hasn't said whether they support black lives or blue lives, because that was one of the major issues in the presidential campaign. And we already see where that's gone, to the point where now they're trying to, folks who view one side or the other, they're tampering with voter rights and all. So there's a whole political milieu that this question is now falling into, and that is why it's going to be difficult to get a fair trial, because, as said, and this is theoretical, it's all theoretical.
You redeemed yourself. You redeemed yourself very well. Thank you so much. You came close to the edge, though.
How far away was I?
Oh, not far at all.
You take it on home.
The beginning.
You take it on home. Thank you so much for allowing me to talk.
Thank you. Now, this is happening in the open. Nobody's hiding anything. They're telling us this is part of jury selection, and it is. They're looking for the right jury, which is the primary job of the lawyer or lawyers. You have to plumb the minds of the people you're questioning to find out just where they are in the scheme of things, and will they fit? Will they fit the narrative that you want them to fit so that they can bring home the verdict that you want? Now, you and I may take umbrage at that and say, that's really low down and dirty. Yeah, but it's in the courts every single day. This happens. And the question was asked, or the questions were asked specifically to locate the emotion and the psyche of each person they interviewed as a prospective juror. Because, they will talk about evidence at some point, whatever it is. But the primary job of the lawyer is to make sure as he or she can, that the people in that box identify with his client or her client and will deliver a verdict accordingly. And that is why the question was asked. And immediately also, we have the dichotomy, a racial dichotomy made plain in the court. It's a black and white issue. And who made it black and white? The lawyers did. The judge allowed it. This is straight, undiluted racism. It doesn't look like it. It doesn't sound like it. But it is it. You see how it works? They're not hiding. They're going about their business. They have a plan. And the plan calls for as many jurors as possible identifying with Derek Chauvin, the cop on trial for killing George Floyd. Nobody's talking about whether you identify with George Floyd. They're asking about whether you identify with movements. And it is thoroughly race-based as a question. Okay, so we'll take a break. and come back and talk about something else right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we move into the second part of it. I'm scrambling to shift things around because a lot has changed since the time I prepared my last program and right now. Things are breaking all over the place, and we're trying to stay reasonably current with events. So you know by now that this young man has been charged with killing. His name, by the way, is Robert Aaron Long. Charged with killing 8 people at 3 separate massage parlors in Atlanta, Georgia. We don't know why. And I'm going to say something that may shock you. I don't want to know why. I'm not interested in why. Because that takes us, I think, where the killer wants to take us. The killer is looking, obviously, part of the reason they do these things, outlandish as they are, is for notoriety. They want people talking about them. They want to enter their names in a nefarious book of fame. He ended 8 lives just like that. And it appears that even he doesn't know why. He's so off the chain psychologically. But I wanted to talk or to find out from you, what should our attitude be as a society to egregious acts like this? People are still talking, you know, it's got to get a fair trial, as if there could ever be a fair trial for somebody like that, or whether somebody like that deserves a trial. It may sound really harsh, but I think you follow the Hammurabi Code in this kind of a situation. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. It took 8 people's lives. It is only fair. And arithmetically speaking, it's still not fair, because it's just one of you, and you chose to end 8 people's lives. What I also am looking at is the society's reaction, our reaction as a society. Did you pick up anything irregular in the way that the public, at least from the initial interviews and so forth, the public is reacting to this? Of course, everybody thinks it's a horrible thing. Did you get anything more than that? Yes, it's a horrible thing, and we don't need to debate that. But is there something that we are missing here that we ought to pay particular attention to? Because this is not the first time we've seen mass killings, and it won't be the last. Nor is it the first time that we've seen what we can easily regard as race-based killing. And today, starting yesterday, was a big hue and cry about anti-Asian violence, as if Asians were not subjected to violence, unspeakable violence before. So what is it about this that encourages the media as an institution to position both the crime and the alleged criminal in a particular place, still afforded protection? Protection that he did not afford his victims. Same number, 888-874-4888. What are we as a society, in light of our reaction, our collective reaction here to this heinous crime? What are we saying as a society? You know, we get all the pro forma statements, how people are outraged. Yeah, we get that. We expect that to be said. But is there something more that should have been said and still needs to be said? Is there something more that should have been done and still needs to be done? What are you thinking? 888-874-4888. I like when major events like this occur, that we stop the clock right now. Stop the clock and disassemble what we think we see and what we think we understand about an event or about some kind of major news item, and really tear it apart. What are we likely to find? What kind of a message are we overlooking? We don't want to deal with it. So we put it all in, you know, a guy who appears to be demented and did this horrible thing, ended the lives of 8 people. And now the task is to figure out which is the best way forward out of this. It's insufficient as a response. What say you? At 888-874-4888, we're closing in, but I'd like to hear a really good answer before we shut down for the day. Anybody willing to take on the challenge? What is it that we are encouraged not to see, not to feel, and not to do? And yet, we are supposed to be comforted by the fact that we're actually doing something. We actually are contributing to a solution. I dare you to tell me what it is. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. Maybe, you know, my vision is very poor, and I will not argue that point. I have very poor vision. But there's something here that as a nation, we have come to this point many times, and we have managed to avoid it. And this particular mass killing is the latest manifestation of the problem that we have as a nation. What is that? What is the name you give that? Do you have any idea? Do you want to put something up for our consideration? Because its story is not ended at all. It's going to continue. But it will not consider those things that must be considered, I think. If we are sincere about wanting to do things differently. Mary from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Miss Lead.
It's your Treese. And how are you doing, mm-hmm. Mary?
Very well, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're asking that question, and the way I'm hearing it as though this perpetrator, this person, he was doing the town a favor by sort of cleaning up an area that supposedly is very unfavorable for certain people. For instance, like he was shooting the people in a massage parlor, and that's not a place where everybody wants to have a massage parlor. And it's time for us to clean it up. We don't need this sort of thing.
He certainly did, because he regularly, according to reports, he regularly patronized such establishments.
And on top of that, he's supposed to be the number one Christian, like, schoolboy, which has two sides to it. Like, oh, he's all this great guy, super guy, but then again, he's doing something that's not really the Christian value as he's supposed to be.
Well, I have to challenge that, because history has shown time and time again that some of the worst violence in the world have been done by some of the most religious people.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. But they're trying to clean him up on one time and saying, well, this is the greatest thing he should be doing, to try to clean up the area.
But who is the they that you're referring to?
Well, just, I would say the media is making it sound as though he should be doing, he's doing a great service, I guess, for the community or communities that he had visited, where he had visited the massage parlors in.
No, I'm listening to you. I'm listening to you.
And it's just that we're supposed to feel, I don't know why we're supposed to feel that he's got a problem, and I don't think he has a problem. I believe that he's able to do what he's doing because it's being allowed for him to do. It has not stopped. It's absolutely great for him to go into some place and just do what he wants to do. And he's supposed to be like a big pat on the back for, good guy, you did a good thing for us.
Okay. I see where you're going, but I want you to be a little bit more specific before we end your time with us today.
Okay. But I just find it a little bit misogynistic, as though it's a group, that there's a group behind him saying, go ahead, guys, this is what we do. This is the way we are to be, because we are of a certain group or gender, and we're allowed to do these things.
Okay. I get where you're going. I see. All right. You made a good point, an excellent point, but you still have some homework to do. So maybe you could think about it and come back again and give us more definition.
Absolutely.
Because I think you're onto something very, very powerful there.
Right. Thank you for letting me get on the air.
Thank you for calling in. 888-874-4888. There were many clues, of at least three strong ones, in what Mary had to say. I don't know if you spotted them, if they resonated with you, or if you have some ideas of your own. We still have some time. The program is not going to end right now. We have a couple of minutes that you can contribute your idea or your analysis to. 888-874-4888. I got from Mary this notion that he was acting, or he may very well be, you know, out of his mind. Let's say that as a possibility. But at the same time, a part of his mind understands that he has power and authority over certain people, and they don't look like him. Whether that is in and of itself encouragement to do what he did, because that gets tied into cultural issues and social issues, psychological issues, which have to be explored. But that was a very powerful point that you made. She believed that this is a particular aspect of his life that he has been experiencing for a long, long, long time. He gets to do whatever he wants. What made him, if he cracked, I'm not going to suggest that he cracked, because it may just turn out to be that he just continued. This is a continuum, or it mushroomed to a level where it started to control him. Stephen from New York, what are you thinking?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hey. Hi, YouTube.
Hi.
I just, from what I saw today, I think it's just like white privilege. Like, you know, you're white and he's right, and they're just trying to come up with excuses.
But aren't you oversimplifying it a little bit? Just to paint it with this broad brush called white privilege.
But I think if it was like somebody from like another ethnic background, they might not even be alive right now. And like, I don't know, the narrative might be a little different.
So that is your main observation, is that he was basically showing all the telltale signs of white privilege.
Yeah, because even I think they had an issue with the police commissioner or whatever, when he made that first statement, and he was saying that, you know, the kid was saying that he had a problem. So they were bringing it out as, to me, it sounded like he was the victim, not the people that were killed, because I haven't really heard anybody say anything about the victims.
Yes, the victims. The people at whom he directed both his anger and his violence. How do you assess the broader reaction, the broader society's reaction?
I haven't heard a lot of people speaking about it yet. Like, I really heard about this story this morning on my way to work. And my own reaction was, it's bad. Like, it's just sad. Like, really sad that, like, he's a kid. He's, like, 21. And that he would go to that extreme, like, he's that, I don't know, like, he lost it. Like, his story is that, I mean, it's like a sin to me. It sounded like he felt it was like temptation, so he had to take them out. I mean, it does sound kind of like he has some delusional thinking. He obviously has delusional thinking, but what would make him feel comfortable to just go around and kill people like that? I mean, it's still, you know, I don't know.
How do you react to the response from the white community, since he's seen as having membership there?
My perception so far is that he has like mental issues. He's like a victim. Like, to me, that's kind of my perception. You know, he had some issues, and poor kid, you know? He lost it, and he went and killed those people.
And that's as deep as people are prepared to go right now.
I don't think that we could analyze it a lot, but I feel like at the base of it, at the core, is just simple. Like, hey, look, he's a white kid. He went out there. He killed some people. And then there's some other stuff with like the there's supposedly a spike in Asian harassment and stuff like that. And then the coronavirus, the Chinese virus, supposedly, that people like to say, which is inappropriate. But, you know, there's something towards that, too, I think, on his Facebook page. So, I mean, it could be a hate crime also, but I don't know.
Well, you did a good job. You offered some very important insights that we should keep in mind. Because we're coming back to the subject. We're not finished discussing it. I just wanted to know, you know, what people's immediate reaction is and how they're putting this event, grisly as it is, but how are they making sense of it, if at all? Thank you, Larry, for your contribution today. And that brings us to the end of our program. It is important, and I am very much encouraged by the fact that you're doing, at least I see it, I feel it, I sense an effort to get a little bit deeper into things. Don't just, you know, accept what is presented by media and even perhaps by yourself. You're rushing through a decision, but you haven't given it enough thought. But I sense a movement in that direction, and I'm very, very happy about it, because we need to think at that level. It's not like everything just, you know, requires, you know, that you go into a cave and ponder for at least 3 months. Nothing like that. But I am sensing a move away from, you know, just a quick understanding of things, which usually leads to a misunderstanding of things, and a desire now to be more focused in your thinking and to stretch yourself into thinking outside of the box, as the old tired saying goes. But this is what it is all about, developing your mind and training or retraining yourself to consider all possibilities before you come to a conclusion. Well, tomorrow is Friday. It's Free Your Mind Friday tomorrow. Think of something you want to talk about, and let's meet up again tomorrow. Thanks for joining me today. I really enjoyed your company today. Bye-bye.